I always keep the door open, and I say yes rather than no, and I figure out there must be some way that I will be able to do this, and I'll just put my mind to it.
And that's how guitarist Sharon Isbin ended up creating three projects in the span of 4 months just this past year. She'll tell you about all three of those projects, including this new recording, which celebrates souvenirs of Spain and Italy with Pacifica Quartet. It's all coming up on New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Amacher. I'm talking with Sharon Isbin, who has a new recording out with the Pacifica Quartet. It's called Souvenirs of Spain and Italy. Welcome, Sharon.
Thank you so much, Julie. Pleasure to talk with you again.
So I'm wondering how you and the Pacifica Quartet started your musical relationship.
Well, in 2016, I invited them to join me in my annual recital at the Aspen Music Festival, and we hit it off. I think they're one of the great string quartets on the planet, and they have such a wonderful sense of emotion, nuance, vitality, excitement, exuberance, and musicality that we really felt a kinship right from the start. And they asked me after this concert if I'd like to tour with them, and of course I said yes. And then just last year they said, would you like to make a recording with us? And I was thrilled. So we did this on the CD record label out of Chicago, and I'm thrilled to have had this opportunity.
And they're celebrating their 25th anniversary season, aren't they?
They are, yes.
Yeah. Do you know anything about the structure of the ensemble? I know that the two original members are still there, the cellist Brandon Vamos.
Yes, and his wife, Simin Ganatra. And they have two fabulous new members, Mark Holloway on viola and Austin Hartman on second violin. And they're just great players. We played together last night, and in fact, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was in the front row of the audience, and it was exciting to meet her at the gala afterwards. I was seated at the same dinner table as she was, and what a national treasure, and to think that it's her son who created this record label.
Wow, that must have been a thrill to be seated at the same table with her.
Yes, I got to tell her how I'm her biggest fan, so that was very special.
The recording that you've just released with Pacifica Quartet is called Souvenirs of Spain and Italy. It features works by Italian composers, and they have a connection to Spain. Will you talk a little bit more about the theme of this recording?
Yes. One of the rarely heard and rarely recorded works was written for Segovia in 1950 by Mario Castanuevo Tedesco. And his family originally came from Spain. They were forced out in 1492 to escape the Grand Inquisition and fled to Italy. And then they had to flee again in the late 1930s to escape the Nazis. And they settled in California, where Tedesco continued to write many works for guitar and for Andres Segovia. So I find that this piece is, I completely agree with Mario Castanuevo Tedesco, who wrote that he considers it one of his best works of chamber music ever that he wrote. And it is virtuosic for all the instruments. We each get to almost like in a concerto style play and be expressive with the lyricism of the different themes. And that's why it is so hard to put together. But we had the luxury of many rehearsals and many performances before we went in to record this in January at the at Indiana University in the beautiful concert hall there. The personal thing for me that made this so special was I discovered several months before the recording that Mario Castanuevo Tedesco's granddaughter, Diana Castanuevo Tedesco, lives just a few blocks from me in New York. So we got together and she regaled me with fantastic stories about her grandfather that were so inspiring and gave us a manuscript copy in his own handwriting of this quintet, so we could consult that for notes, the many, many dynamic markings that he wrote in it throughout, and just to have that connection with what was his own handwriting was so special. I felt like he was with us, that Mario was there, and that I was part of the family. And it just, I can't tell you how that influenced my playing and my whole approach to this project. I really felt a sense of connection. You think about how this could have been one of the millions of lives slaughtered by the Nazis, but for his family managing to escape just in the nick of time, we are blessed with so many extraordinary pieces of music, including this quintet that he wrote. And it just brings home that terrible history in a very visceral kind of way, because I'm playing the music of someone who was fortunate enough to escape where millions were not. And we have to be so mindful of understanding the interconnectivity of all of us. We are all of one race, and there's no us and them. And it's in this time of great strife and division to really identify with our commonality and celebrate our differences at the same time, but welcome it all in a spirit of inclusion. And I think that just somehow through music becomes even more powerful.
I know in the second movement, he actually is referring to a souvenir of Spain. Is that correct?
That's correct, and that inspired our title of Souvenirs of Spain and Italy. And all of these composers are connected in different ways. Vivaldi, for example, being from Italy, but it was a Spaniard, Emilio Pujol, who arranged this particular piece and added a viola part to set the guitar in the prominent role that it now has as a concerto form. And I chose to do it with just three instruments in this case, one violin, one viola, one cello, and guitar in the Pujol arrangement, which is more often done with string orchestra. And sometimes I add double bass to that. But in this case, the intimacy that is captured with just four people playing I get my opportunity to do Baroque performance embellishment in the slow movement, in the repeats, and to celebrate my mentor in that process, who was the great Bach scholar and keyboard artist Rosalind Turek, with whom I studied for 10 years, in specific the Bach lute suite. So this is connected to that legacy, and it's just a magical piece. Then when you cross over to Boccherini, you have a whole other experience with an Italian composer who from the age of 18 lived in Spain for the rest of his life and composed in the court of the king. He wrote as a cellist many, many works for cello and string quartet. And some of these quintets he decided to set for guitar. So the most famous is this particular one with the Fandango last movement. You can get a sense of the flavor for this if you're familiar with Casanova's quotation. When he first saw this being danced in Madrid, it blew his mind. And he wrote in 1767, quote, "Each couple, man and woman, taking no more than three steps at a time and clicking castanets to the sound of the orchestra, make 1,000 gestures, take 1,000 attitudes with a lasciviousness with which nothing can compare. This dance is the expression of love from beginning to end, from the sigh of desire to the ecstasy of enjoyment." That, in the words of Casanova, and I hope your listeners will feel that spirit when they hear our Fandango. In fact, we invited a virtuoso and very creative castanet player and tambourine player from Brazil, Eduardo Leandro, to improvise to this particular movement. And he had such a sense of color and rhythmic spirit and feeling. I think both Casanova and Boccherini would have loved what Eduardo did.
I know also the guitar can play with a flamenco-inspired strum, and that you do that to be heard above the quartet, and you've created your own style of that technique. Can you describe that?
Well, yes, because in the arrangement that Boccherini did, he didn't give those kinds of specific instructions. You'd see a few chords here and there, and then you have to figure out what to do. So I love being able to add that flamenco-like spirit to what would be a very natural place in this very fiery Spanish dance.
The balance between you and the quartet on this recording is quite remarkable. How are you able to create that sense of balance that allows the guitar to have that equal presence with the quartet?
In performance, I use sound reinforcement. And in the recording, of course, we can't quite do that. So I faced the quartet so that my microphone would be as isolated as possible from there, so we would have the possibility of separate mix capacity afterwards. And that's really important because there's just so much going on at once, especially in the very densely set arrangement that you will see in the Castanuevo Tedesco. That is the hardest one, really, to make all of that happen. And we had a brilliant producer, Judy Sherman, and an equally brilliant engineer in Bill Malone from Sedil, and they really were able to get the naturalness of our sounds and the right mix and blend. We also had the advantage of being able to record this in the beautiful concert hall. It's called Our Concert Hall in Indiana University, where the quartet is in residence there. And having a resonant hall where we're all on the stage together makes a big difference in terms of just the collaboration and the feeling that is evoked. I think having the advantage of performing not only in the few years beforehand, but in the week beforehand, on stage live for an audience, that really gears us up, and that knowing that we're making the recording makes us even more hyper-focused on each being super prepared. And that kind of preparation gives us a feeling of freedom and spontaneity that we can just let loose when we are playing. So doing the recording, we just approached as if we were doing a performance.
I know that you have a couple of more very special projects coming up in 2020, and one is going to be highlighting your first tour to India. Can you talk a little bit about that tour and the artist with whom you collaborated and how it's turning into a special recording?
Well, this was a most unexpected and wonderful opportunity. It began actually 10 years ago when Amjad Ali Khan, who is one of India's most respected legendary musicians. He performs on the sarod, which is another kind of string instrument. It has the metal body and metal strings, and they use a plectrum. And he wanted to meet up with me to see if there might be some sort of collaboration that would be possible. And we realized that to make that happen, he'd have to actually compose music for us to do together. So that's what he did. It took a while for him to find the right collaborator who could notate this and who could understand guitar technique enough and improvisation. And this particular person had a skill as a jazz musician as well. So for 2 years, he set about notating the compositions of Amjad Ali Khan that he had selected for us to do. And I was able to tour in India with his two brilliant sons, Aman and Ayan Ali Bangash, with their tabla player, and we performed in Mumbai, Delhi, and Calcutta. That was just this last February. I had to learn this very quickly because it came the month after doing the Pacifica recording, during which time I had no time to look at anything else. So I really went on a crash course of raga music. I'd been listening to it all my life and had been inspired by Indian musicians, But to have the opportunity to actually play it, I had to learn the art of embellishment and improvisation, which is not a lot unlike what I had been doing with Bach and Rosalind Turek. It's a similar kind of process. So it was absorbing the language and finding my own personal means of expression in that, because it really had to sound spontaneous. And being able to perform it on tour, it was immediately apparent after this that we had to record it. So rather than return to Delhi in the middle of monsoon season in August, I said, let's just do this while you're here in New Jersey. They were performing with the New Jersey Symphony. And I said, do you have any free days? And they had a couple. So we went into the studio, recorded it. It's being edited now in India. And that is another exciting project to give birth to.
Wow. Being very spontaneous here with all these collaborations. It's very exciting.
Doing three albums in 4 months was a little bit nuts, but I really believe in all of them. The other album I just had finished in June, and it's all music composed for me. The centerpiece is a spectacular concerto written for me by Chris Brubeck, and the second movement pays homage to his father, Dave Brubeck, with a beautiful ballad that he had penned. And it's going to come out in time for the big 100th anniversary season, 2021, of Dave Brubeck's music. So I'm excited to bring this along with music that's quite different from it, music by Tan Dunn, Leo Brower, and Richard Danielpour, that's been composed for me on this album that will be called Affinity after the title of the Brubeck Concerto.
Wow, I can't wait to talk to you about that recording when it comes out. Well, all of these collaborations with so many different artists have to be so rewarding. What do you learn about yourself when you do all these different collaborations?
I always keep the door open, and I say yes rather than no, and I figure out there must be some way that I will be able to do this, and I'll just put my mind to it. I think having practiced transcendental meditation since I was 17, doing that twice a day really gives me a mental stamina and an ability to release stress so that I'm really able to focus on my own inner core and really put myself to the maximum focus, and that has given me the opportunity to explore so many different kinds of genres, from folk music with Joan Baez to country music with Mark O'Connor to Brazilian music with Jobim and Paul Winter. I mean, the list goes on. Adding ragas to the mix, that was a whole new experience, let me tell you, but my gosh, so rewarding. And they're spectacular players.
I have to ask you, though, about meditation, because now it's kind of, I don't want to call it a fad, because I know that it's incredibly beneficial. It's something I do every day. But the fact that you've been doing it since you were 17, how did you ever even think to do it that early on in your life and your career?
I actually didn't think about it. It was my father's idea. He's a scientist, and it happened to make the cover story of Scientific American in the late 1970s. And he brought that home, mid-1970s, he brought that home and he showed it to my mother and to me. And he said, I think you should read this article. It's fascinating. So we did. And he said, what do you think about us all learning TM, Transcendental Meditation? So we thought, why not? And I've been doing it ever since. And it really is such a powerful technique. I feel like I've been given twice as much life, because I don't know if you have the same experience sometimes at the end of a day, in the late afternoon, you really just want to chill out and take a nap, and you know, that's it. But you meditate, and boy, I'm ready for another day. So I get to extend that another few hours, and it's just powerful. It's not mindful meditation. It's a different kind of technique where it's very restful and gives the mind a chance to rest. And you're just sitting in a chair doing it. It's not religious in any way, shape, or form. It's 20 minutes in the morning before breakfast and 20 minutes in the afternoon. And it's a great way to reinvigorate the spirit and access your own inner creativity.
That's New Classical Tracks from American Public Media, with special thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode. If you're enjoying New Classical Tracks, the best thing that you can do for the show is to tell somebody about it, help spread the word, and take a moment to rate and review us on your podcasting app. I'm Julie Almacher.